the headlines. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei highlights the significance of elections in the country and warns about the enemy's plots to create rifts between the people and the Islamic establishment. Iran marks the 32nd anniversary of the passing away of the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. And at least 15 Palestinians were wounded by Israeli soldiers after they took part in an anti-Israel settlement protest in the occupied West Bank. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has addressed the nation on the 32nd anniversary of the passing away of Iran's Islamic Republic's founder, Imam Khomeini. During his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei highlighted the importance of elections in Iran, including the upcoming presidential vote. Let's take a look at some of his remarks.
Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei called for a huge turnout of Iranians in the June 18 presidential election. He said existing shortcomings should not discourage people from having political participation. The leader said if there are disorders, inefficiency, and weakness in the management of the country, people should compensate for that by making the right choice. Ayatollah Khamenei also called on the candidates running for president not to make empty promises. He said such pledges are harmful to the country and will discourage people. The leader also advised people to avoid making a decision only based on the candidate's pledges. He said people should consider deeds rather than words of the presidential hopefuls, and they should review the candidate's background to see if they can fulfill their promises. Ayatollah Khamenei urged influential figures to encourage people to participate in the election. The leader also warned against the enemy's attempts to create rifts between the Iranian people and the Islamic establishment. Also in his remarks, the leader spoke about the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who passed away 32 years ago. Ayatollah Khamenei said Imam Khomeini viewed elections as a manifestation of people's will and stood firm against hegemony and corruption.
Campaigning for the upcoming presidential election is underway in Iran due to the coronavirus pandemic. Election campaigns are held in the form of televised addresses and debates. Yusuf Jalali reports.
The race for the top executive post in Iran rages on among the seven candidates who appear before reporters every day to outline their plans. Plans for a brighter future, stronger economy, and more opportunities for the youth. So journalists rarely ask contenders about what they have done in the past, but what they will do should they win the election.
The first move that my administration will focus on is to uproot poverty in the first year. If poverty is eliminated, our people will excel in culture and enlightenment.
I will pay special attention to the youth and their problems. Unemployment is now the first and foremost issue of our youth. As an economist, I believe that if we remove the uncertainty in our market, we can easily create jobs. Also, I will allow young experts to run at least 50% of my cabinet.
All of the candidates have so far spoken of problems that they blame on the incumbent government. Problems that range from inflation to unemployment. Some of the contenders find the root cause of these problems in the fact that outgoing President Rouhani has put all his eggs in the basket of the 2015 nuclear deal, which is now hanging by a thread.
Nobody can ignore the negative effects of the sanctions on our economy. But at the same time, we cannot reach out to our enemy and appeal to them to lift the sanctions. This method has not worked and will not work. We cannot pin hope on the lifting of sanctions to fix our economy. We should have relied on our own domestic capacities to have a resilient economy.
This year, the coronavirus pandemic has curtailed election rallies and electoral tours. Based on the guidelines set by the Coronavirus Combat Committee, campaigns are conducted through televised debates between candidates, feature documentaries, and speeches. Campaigning will continue until 24 hours before Election Day on June 18th.
The Islamic Republic holds an average of one election each year since its establishment in 1979. Now candidates call on Iranians to turn up en masse for this year's election, as in the previous rounds, since high voter turnout is translated into a seal of approval for the legitimacy of the Islamic establishment. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran's presidential candidates are outlining their plans ahead of the June 18th election. This as people are weighing up who can be the most qualified candidate to run for the country, to run the country, that is, for the next 4 years. At the moment, what seems to be the issue of very high significance for people is the candidate's foreign policy agenda. And the following report will take a look at how the presidential hopefuls are planning to deal with the rest of the world.
One of the contenders for Iran's presidency, Ebrahim Raisi, has outlined his foreign policy agenda, saying he intends to have better interaction with the world. Raisi says his plans are based on principles such as honor, wisdom, and expediency set out by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Raisi says four major points his administration will try to address include the Iran nuclear deal or the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, better known as the JCPOA, Iran's regional influence, economic diplomacy, and last but not least, targeted foreign relations. Saeed Jalili is another candidate running for presidency. The 55-year-old, who has served as Iran's top nuclear negotiator, says his foreign policy approach mainly focuses on anti-Iran sanctions. Jalili says lifting sanctions, circumventing the measures, and rendering them ineffective for good are issues to be addressed. Another candidate for the top executive post, Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi, however, says the main focus of his government will be to establish and boost trade relations with African and Latin American countries. He also says his administration will make the best use of foreign assets to improve the economy. Mohsen Mehr Alizadeh, who previously served as Iran's vice president, says a development-oriented foreign policy will be amongst priorities of his government. Mehr Alizadeh says boosting bilateral and multilateral relations with Iran's neighbors is also part of his agenda. The 64-year-old candidate says boosting Iran's economy is possible amid sanctions. Former central bank governor of Iran, Abdel Nasser Hemmati, says he would work to boost Iran's foreign policy. Hemmati has also vowed to get the Financial Action Task Force, or the FATF, passed in the Expediency Council if elected president. Another presidential hopeful, Mohsen Rezaei, has stressed the need to strengthen ties with Iran's immediate neighbors and other regional countries in order to improve the economy. The presidential candidate has vowed to work hard for democratic institutions and invoke optimism amongst people that their votes count. Rezaei has also called for strengthening the country's defense capabilities in the face of any potential foreign threat. Last but not least is Alireza Zarkani, the 56-year-old politician who is currently serving as member of Iran's parliament, says foreign policy is the fourth axis of his plan. Zarkani says he wants to turn Iran as a role model for the region. He says foreign policy must be adopted to bring dignity, adding that it's also very important to use the capacity of Iranians abroad.
Friday marks the 32nd anniversary of the passing of the founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. The following report takes a look at his life and his ideology.
Ruhollah Mousavi Khomeini, better known as Imam Khomeini, was born on the 24th of September, 1902, in central Iran. He studied to become a religious scholar and in 1963 became a marja, the highest religious authority in Shia Islam. Imam Khomeini was an outspoken critic of the Pahlavi regime that ruled Iran before the Islamic Revolution. In 1963, he was arrested by the regime's security service for his anti-Shah speeches. In 1964, Imam Khomeini was sent to exile, living in Turkey, Iraq, and then France, from where he urged his supporters to overthrow the Shah. On February 1, 1979, he returned to Iran, and 10 days later, the Pahlavi monarchy collapsed. Imam Khomeini believed that Iran should strive towards self-reliance. He viewed certain elements of the Western culture as inherently decadent that have a corrupting influence upon the youth. His ultimate vision was for Islamic nations to converge into a single unified power in order to avoid alignment with either the West or the East, and he believed that this would happen at some point in the future. Imam Khomeini intended to reconstruct Muslim unity and solidarity, so he declared the birth week of Prophet of Islam as the Unity Week. He then declared the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan as the International Quds Day. Imam Khomeini was among the world's top leaders to influence boycotts against Israel starting in 1967. After the Six-Day War between Israel and the Arabs began, he called any relationship with Israel haram or religiously prohibited. This message was, in a way, the initiative that led to pervasive boycott Israel campaigns. The Iranian charismatic leader has been praised by many prominent international figures.
The thoughts and ideology of Imam Khomeini transcend barriers of time and place. He has left long-lasting impressions on the world history.
Imam Khomeini was not only a great leader for the Iranian people, but also a leader for all the freedom movements across the globe.
Imam Khomeini's influence on the world's affair was so much that even some of his enemies praised him.
Ayatollah Khomeini, through a well-thought-out plan, created crisis in the Western world. He made plans with such a lightning speed that political analysts and leaders had no time to make counterplans. Nobody could foresee the Imam Khomeini's decisions.
Imam Khomeini passed away in June 1989 at the age of 87. More than three decades after his passing, the Islamic Republic of Iran continues his school of thought in support for resistance against oppression.
Political commentator Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi says the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, tried to put an end to all sectarian divisions in the Islamic world and beyond, and called on the oppressed people to unite against the oppressors.
No one can deny the effect of the revolution of Imam Khomeini in the ongoing, you know, issues of today, after, you know, several decades that had passed from the demise of the Imam Khomeini. We're still observing that. Still things are changing based on the, you know, revolution that Imam brought in Iran, and of course its, you know, its regional effects and global effects across the globe. If you look at the mindset of the people before the revolution, before the changes, the mindset of the people was a sectarian mind, and then Imam is changing and shifting this sectarian mind to a mindset that is dividing the world to not Shias and Sunnis, not even Muslims and non-Muslims, but to oppressors and the oppressed, but to those colonial rules and colonial powers who are going to misuse and colonize the rest of the world. And Imam then is calling upon all the free men and women of the world to get together, to strengthen their power, to stand firm against those oppressors.
The Yemeni people have rallied in the northern city of Sa'ada in a show of resistance against their enemies. Demonstrators chanted slogans and slammed policies of the U.S. and its allies against nations in the region. They also expressed their sympathy with the people of Gaza that was hit by 11 days of Israeli attacks last month. The Yemenis condemned the Israeli killing of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. In their final statement, the Yemeni protesters called on all Muslim nations to boycott American and Israeli products as part of efforts to resist their aggressive policies. The statement also called on the Yemeni people to stand against aggressors. Israeli forces have injured at least 15 Palestinians holding an anti-settlement protest in the northern occupied West Bank. The protest was held in the village of Beita near the city of Nablus following the Friday prayers. The Palestinians were protesting against the construction of a new settlement outpost on top of Sebeh Mountain. Israeli forces attacked the protesters with live bullets and tear gas. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society said one of those injured was in critical condition. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. The UN Security Council has condemned Israel's settlement activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. And India has logged over 132,000 new COVID infections in 24 hours, raising its total caseload to over 28.6 million. The Indian Health Ministry also confirmed more than 2,700 new deaths for the past 24 hours. The latest figure pushes the country's death toll from the virus to over 340,000. India has the world's second largest COVID caseload after the United States. The South Asian country's case tally jumped after infections began to rise in February. They reached their daily peak of over 414,000 on May the 6th. Now daily cases are witnessing a downward trend as a vaccination program goes on. So far, more than 3% of the population in India has been fully vaccinated. Iran has reported 155 more COVID-19 fatalities in 24 hours, raising the overall death toll to around 81,000. The health ministry also reported over 9,000 new infections in the past day, bringing the total caseload to over 2.95 million. Nearly 2.5 million have so far recovered from the disease. The government imposed strict nationwide restrictions in April following a surge in infections and deaths. Iran also launched its national vaccination campaign in early February. More than 4.1 million people have so far received the first dose of a COVID vaccine nationwide. Over 530,000 people have been fully vaccinated against the deadly virus. The World Health Organization has warned about failure to tackle the COVID-19 pandemic unless wealthy nations do more to advance their vaccine donations. A WHO senior advisor said the developed countries should make doses available immediately to make up for disrupted supplies to the organization's COVAX scheme. He said those nations have so far donated 150 million of their surplus doses via COVAX, but the program needs twice that much. He added that they should provide surplus doses to poorer countries instead of giving them to less vulnerable groups such as children. The advisor praised a newly announced U.S. plan to quickly share 25 million doses and encouraged other countries to follow suit. The COVAX sharing scheme has a gap of around 200 million doses caused by Indian vaccine supply disruptions and manufacturing delays. China has blasted the U.S. for meddling over the 1989 Tiananmen incident, urging Washington to face up to its own rights abuses. Wang's remarks came after U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken tweeted on Friday saying that Washington would honor those killed in the Tiananmen crackdown and that it would continue to support Chinese rights activists. On June 4, 1989, Chinese security forces clashed with protesters in Tiananmen Square during a crackdown. Beijing has defended its actions, saying it was the right thing to do in the wake of unrest. Sino-U.S. relations have sunk to historic lows, with the world's two biggest powers clashing over issues ranging from trade and human rights to Hong Kong and Chinese Taipei. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Mohannad Taufiq Abdulhadi, who lived with schizophrenia and was often found wandering in confusion through his Gaza neighborhood, was shot dead by Israeli regime forces near the border fence, says Heb Jamal, journalist, in an article titled, Israeli regime kills Palestinians with mental illness through impunity. Stay tuned for more. On May 30, it will be 1 year since Israeli regime border police killed Iyad al-Halak, an autistic Palestinian man. The police claimed that Halak had an object that looked like a pistol and ran away when ordered to stop. Halak was unarmed. Halak attended and worked at a special needs facility in Al-Quds Old City, meters from where he was shot. Israeli regime police started chasing him after they suspected he was a terrorist because he was wearing gloves. While Halak was trying to hide behind a large rubbish bin, fearing for his life, Israeli regime police shot and killed him. The killing of Palestinians with mental illness is not unusual for the fake regime of Israel. After the recent 11-day Israeli regime assault on Gaza, which killed at least 248 Palestinians, including 66 children and 39 women, and injured hundreds more, Palestinians have held their breath while searching for the missing. One of the victims, Mohammed Tawfiq Abdulhadi, he was found dead in an open area east of Gaza City near the border fence. Mohammed was not killed by an air strike or the impact of a bomb. He was shot by Israeli regime troops in cold blood. Mohammed lived with various conditions, including schizophrenia and depression. When on medication, he was alert and available to his family and only son. Without his medication, though, Mohammed was often confused, known to wander through his neighborhood of Khan Yunis, although his family always eventually found him. When eyewitnesses saw Mohammed, a young man, walking towards the demarcation line and killed by an Israeli regime sniper, it was too dangerous to retrieve his body. No one could alert his family, and his body lay there for more than a week, all because he could not access his medications. Mohammed developed his conditions later in life when he was studying engineering in Germany. Although he had a bright future, social isolation and the troubles being an immigrant forced him to return to his home in Gaza. The indiscriminate killing of Palestinians, particularly in Gaza, does not even spare traumatized children. 11 of the children killed in Gaza this month were receiving trauma counseling to help them deal with life in a state of continuous war. More than two-thirds of children in Gaza experience psychological distress as the mental health crisis in the besieged enclave continues to grow. In one example, 22-year-old Fatih Harb went to a great march of return protest in 2018, counting on the indiscriminate killing of Israeli regime snipers to fatally shoot him. He was, it seems, trying to bring about his own death. When he was not killed by snipers, he set himself on fire on a busy street in Gaza City. The conditions of Gaza military siege and Israeli regime assaults every few years have exacerbated the territory's mental health crisis. The Gaza Community Mental Health Program has reported growing numbers of cases of anxiety, depression, and suicide. Beyond Gaza, this past February, the Zionist regime police killed Munir Anabtawi, a Palestinian man with mental illness in Haifa. Anabtawi reportedly had a psychotic episode after an argument with his mother, who tried to call an ambulance but accidentally dialed the police, whose arrival led to her son's death. The police officer said he acted out of genuine concern for his life. Why five bullets? Fine, give him one. He's down. But one, and another, and another, and another. They neutralized him, the victim's brother told Channel 12 in March, accusing the Zionist regime police of having assassinated Anatwawi. The officer involved was cleared of wrongdoing by the Zionist regime's justice ministry earlier this month. And the Zionist regime army on Twitter deemed its latest assault on Gaza to have been a success. that number presumably includes Palestinians who are vulnerable or who have mental health conditions such as Mohammed Abdul Hadi. The fake regime of Israel can kill those with mental illness with impunity. May you rest in peace, Mohammed, along with every other Palestinian with mental illness who has been victimized by the Zionist regime's brutal military occupation.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
It was the demise, the anniversary of the demise of our great leader, the one who revived Islam in human society after a period of darkness, total darkness, where the entire globe was being ruled by kufr.
Imam Khomeini is a mujaddid, not the mujaddid of Islam. Islam cannot be, Islam is the pure Islam of Allah and the Quran and the Prophet and the Imams and Fatima to Zahra salamullah alayhim ajma'een. That does not, Islam in society requires tajdeed. Say the same way the house of God, the Kaaba, that place is the house of God, but the building was ruined. It needed reconstruction for man. Otherwise, the house of God, the Kaaba, al-Baytul Atiq, the angels were doing tawaf around the Kaaba, Baytul Atiq, in the spiritual realm. But for man, that's all there. But for man, that building, that structure, for man's worship of Allah, for man's guidance, it needed reconstruction. Islam required reconstruction in the Ummah of the Prophet. The bricks had fallen off, they were scattered. The connections were lost. The connections between verses were lost. The connection between the words of the Ahlul Bayt and the verses were lost. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blessed us with this man, Imam Khomeini, that took us back to the teachings of Islam. And we have only seen a glimpse of light of what Islam does. And we see these liberated souls and hearts. How people that would otherwise be selfish, be involved in their personal lives, are going and putting their lives on the line to supply believers of other ethnicities, other racial backgrounds with support to be able to defend themselves, financial support, military support, advice, even blood. Believers from Iraq, from the Islamic Republic, from Syria, defending each other. Ethnicities that are not there, even religions that are not theirs. All the dhimmis that we have in Iraq mostly and in Syria. These people that are under, we as Muslims are obligated to establish a government protecting them. These believers went out of their way, putting their lives on the line, sacrificing their lives to protect these people who don't even share the same faith. This is beauty. This is beautiful, wonderful. Instead of putting your knee on the neck of a person just because he's from a different racial background, because the way you've been taught in this corrupt, ugly, filthy society that's governed by ideology of kufr, rejecting divinity, rejecting God, rejecting purity, rejecting rahmah, rejecting mercy.
Individuals are victims to it. This person is not, it's not a solitary case. It's not one person. It's not about this individual. It's an ideology that causes people to behave this way. When you see a black person, if you're not from that background, you are told to feel badness, to feel you don't want to be around that person, to feel you don't want to be in that neighborhood. That's the teaching of the tyranny. The Fir'aun system is that. إِنَّ فِرْعَوْنَ عَلَى فِي الْأَرْضِ جَعَلَ أَهْلَهَا شِيَعًا. This is the way of the Fir'aun. Divide people up. يَسْتَضْعِفُ طَائِفَةً مِنْهُمْ. Select a group based on whatever ethnic background, racial background, religious background, something, and oppress them. يَسْتَضْعِفُ طَائِفَةً مِنْهُمْ. That's the way of the Fir'aun. That's how a Fir'auni system works. This is a Fir'aun system. It encourages and it influences for someone with a Hispanic background to not feel comfortable around someone from an African-American background or from an African background. Someone with an African background not to feel comfortable with someone that is not from that background. From someone that comes from a white background, not to feel comfortable. That's how people are taught. This is the system of the Fir'aun. Dividing people up. Preferring one over the other. One feeling privileged. One having access to privileges. Others not having that access. That's the system of the Fir'aun. That's not the individuals in it. That's the system of the Fir'aun. And if the individuals follow that, they're poisoned by it. And of course, whoever follows it and accepts it is going with it to hell. Whoever accepts the tyranny of the Fir'aun is going with the Fir'aun to hell. Whoever accepts Trump and the Trump system, and it doesn't matter, it's not about Trump. Obama was the same fool. It's the system. Under Obama, the same number of people were incarcerated from his racial background. Doesn't matter. It's the system of the Fir'aun. It's not this person or the other person. And it's not only in this part of the world. This Fir'aun has a claim to be the leader of the world. They established the United Nations. They give them these nice names to cover the filth of what they're actually doing. It's a means to govern the world, to bring people to their knees. Negotiations. These are the military and negotiations are two sides of the same sword carried by the same tyranny and tyrannical regime, oppressing the different peoples of the world. The different peoples of the world. It's not only here. It's not only here. For us to only be upset or be more upset when it happens to someone that's closer to us is moving away from the teachings of Amir al-Mu'mineen. It's moving away from the teachings of Islam. It's moving away from humanity. Moving away from humanity. What does this mean that I love my people? The people of the world are my people. Why do I differentiate? When I differentiate, that means I have accepted the tyranny of the Fir'aun. I have accepted the system of the Fir'aun. The people of the world are my people. Color of skin, language, culture is not something to differentiate between us. We are all the children of Adam. Ya Bani Adam, the Quran says, for me to feel worse when someone from this racial background, the other... Yes, it's understandable if someone I have spent time with, those are natural things that develop when someone that is your child or things like that, but then someone who I don't have a connection with, the connection is the color of skin. That's not what Islam says. That's not what humanity is. Humanity is all humanity. If I differentiate, I have also accepted racism.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be examining the meaning of justice. So the question we want to address today is this: what exactly do we mean by justice? In the discussion on the justice of God, it's necessary to first of all clarify the meaning of this term before we begin the examination of the reasons why God is just, as well as answering the objections that have been leveled against the justice of God. The topic of the justice of God is one of those topics that has been is debated not only amongst scholars but also by common people as well. So this is one of those topics, one of those hot topics that a lot of people have a lot of questions about, and it deserves to be addressed and discussed. Of course, we do give the reservation that in the context and in the parameters of our broadcast, we can't exactly examine these in a total and a complete way, but we do want to give indications that can help our listeners maybe clarify some of the obscurities and ambiguities regarding this topic. So the question we want to address is the meaning, what the meaning of justice is in this discussion. As we said in some of our previous sessions, justice means basically to place something in the place that's proper to it and that it's suitable to it. As you can see, in this sense, justice is one of the attributes of the actions of a person who is just. Meaning that we say that his action is just, meaning this action has been performed in a way that's suitable to it, in a place that's suitable to it, in a time that's suitable to it. Now, the suitability of an action, in other words, how do we know that a certain place or a certain time is suitable to a certain action? And this is something that varies from case to case. It's possible that reason and the intellect may understand whether a certain time or a certain place or a certain situation and in a certain context is suitable to a certain action. For example, reason says that it's improper to punish somebody without first having explained him his responsibility. Punishing somebody in the place or in the time before one has explained to him his responsibility is considered wrong and unjust. This is not the suitable time to punish somebody. Yes, after one has explained him what his responsibility is, one, and secondly, he hasn't performed it in this situation, reason says that punishing the person is suitable and proper, is just, in other words. So this is a place where reason understands right, the suitability of this place and understands what justice is. But in certain situations, reason is incapable of doing so. It falls outside of the boundaries of reason. Like, for example, reason understands that it's necessary for God to give the people a law, right? To give the people a law that can preserve them from society and preserve them and the people who live in society from falling into chaos, killing one another, and destroying one another. A law is necessary to preserve them from these calamities and these maladies. Reason tells us that it's improper for God to leave the people without a law. But what exactly the details of that law is, this is something that reason doesn't understand. The details and the particulars of that law is something that it is incapable of independently understanding. This is a place where it needs revelation. Thank you for joining us here today on The Key. We were examining the meaning of justice and its different categories. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Imam Khomeini's best substitute. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The enemies of the Islamic Republic of Iran thought that with Imam Khomeini's passing away, the Islamic Revolution would perish. But they didn't know that Ayatollah Khamenei is the student of Imam Khomeini and has been trained in the school of that unmatched leader. Now, 32 years after the departure of Imam Khomeini, even the enemies of the Islamic Revolution admit that Ayatollah Khamenei has guided the revolution and the Islamic Republic of Iran in the best way. Ayatollah Khamenei has turned Iran to the most secure country in West Asia, despite myriads of plots that have been hatched by the avowed enemies of the Islamic system. The former U.S. Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, said that Ayatollah Khamenei is able to thwart the schemes which the best minds have designed, with spending the highest budgets in a very long time, and the skilled people have implemented with 1 hour speech. Imam Khomeini used to emphasize that Ayatollah Khamenei is the most qualified person for leadership of the Islamic Revolution. Once he said, "Find a person like Mr. Khamenei who is committed to and in service of Islam and feels wholeheartedly to serve this nation. You cannot find. I know him for long years." The Imam wrote in a letter to Ayatollah Khamenei, "As I have been in close contact with you since the pre-revolution years, and this contact remains to date, I consider you as one of the able arms of the Islamic Republic. And I know that among the friends and devotees to Islam and Islamic fundamentals, you are among the rare persons who shine like the sun." Dear listeners, Ayatollah Khamenei's strong faith in God and his trust in God's promises are very outstanding. Secretary General of the Lebanese anti-terrorist legendary movement Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, says, "As for the things that I think are among his prominent characteristics, is the high trust of Imam Khamenei in Almighty God, that you take over a responsibility as great as that of Imam Khamenei in administration of the Islamic Republic, leadership of the Ummah, confronting the US, the rebels of planet Earth and arrogant of the world, and support the downtrodden and the oppressed, to go on the toughest battlefront saying, I trust in God, while you really trust. If Ayatollah Khamenei had not reached such a great degree of trust in God, he could not have transferred it to others." Among Ayatollah Khamenei's exemplary characteristics in the field of policy are his recognition of enemy and political acumen. He has a high mastery of the issues of the region and the world. He's quite aware of the schemes of the enemies for the region. He is very kind toward the Islamic countries and very harsh with enemies. The leader is strongly against division among Islamic sects and fully supports the cause of Palestine and any other freedom-seeking movement on planet Earth. Just like Imam Khomeini, he never trusts in the words and promises of domineering powers. Like his teacher and beloved Imam, he never considers religion separate from politics. Ayatollah Khamenei incessantly supports the oppressed and fights the oppressors. Russian President Vladimir Putin wrote in his memoirs after visiting Ayatollah Khamenei, "When I visited Ayatollah Khamenei, I saw all the merits that have been written about Prophet Jesus, and all those merits were personified for me. There is a great sage in Iran whom I didn't think to be this much holistic in views. He is a sage and a scholar who decides and regulates Iran's policy, and with his ample acumen and intelligence, Iran will face no danger. In meeting him, I realized the real meaning of the constitution of the Islamic Republic, the meaning of velayat-e-faqih, of religious scholars that I had heard." Dear friends, Ayatollah Khamenei always considers himself as the servant of people and keeps advising the officials to address the problems of people and try to live like them. He leads a very simple life and has always prevented his children from taking over any political or economic position and responsibility. Thus, his children are just engaged in teaching and research in academic centers and living simple life. Ayatollah Khamenei supports people like a loving father. For instance, with the outbreak of coronavirus in the country, he told people that this is a divine test and we should have patience and help each other to overcome this problem. Since the very beginning of the epidemic, he has recommended the people to fully observe the instructions of the health ministry and officials. He called on the people to avoid unnecessary travels and wear masks in public. He also urged all institutions to cooperate with the health ministry to rein in the disease. From the very first days, the leader asked for people's sympathy with the families and jobs which have been affected by the epidemic. Hence, he urged formation of the nationwide faithful assistance plan to to help the needy and the strata that have been beleaguered by the coronavirus outbreak. Another prominent characteristic of the leader is his deep love for youth. He says, "Wherever we have trusted the young generation, we have advanced." He believes that employing the specialist, devoted and brave youth can remove all obstacles. The leader keeps meeting the youth from different walks of life and various fields of occupation. He says, "Dear ones, the youth period is the time of ability. Where should this ability be used? In my opinion, it should be mainly used in acquisition of knowledge, creation of purity of self, spirit of piety, and building of physical force, which is sport. These three issues are the main ones. If I am asked what I want from you youth, I will say education, self-purification, and sport. I think the youth should pursue these three characteristics." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies: 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In his speech on the anniversary of the passing of Imam Khomeini on the 3rd of June 2020, Ayatollah Khamenei spoke about the transformations which Imam Khomeini brought about in Iran and the Iranian nation. Transforming people's outlook about the future and creation of modern Islamic civilization. Inner the transformation was changing the people's mentality about the future. During the time when revolutionary activities began and when Imam entered the arena, despite the slogans that some parties, groups, and individuals, which were very limited and small in number, chanted, the people did not see a future. They did not envisage a future ahead of them that gave to the creation of the new Islamic civilization. If you look at the Iranian nation today, you see the blessed hands of Imam as the architect of this condition. The people are looking towards creating a new Islamic civilization, forging a great Islamic alliance and establishing the Islamic Ummah. In the present time, this is the outlook of the masses of the people. Transforming people's attitude towards the young generation and trusting them. Another area of transformation that Imam brought about was a change in the outlook towards youth. He trusted the thoughts and actions of the youth. That was a transformation in the true sense of the word. For example, when the Islamic Revolution God's Corps was formed, he placed 20-plus-year-old youth at the top of this organization. They were youth who were at most 30 years old. They were top of the God's Corps, and they were commanders and generals. Those youths were entrusted with big tasks. The same was true of other areas. He had astonishing trust in the youth whom he believed in, and he gave them responsibilities in the judiciary and other areas. He assigned them different roles, and he trusted their thoughts and their actions. Transforming people's viewpoint about world powers and believing in the possibility of their defeat. At that time, before the Islamic Revolution, no one believed that one could say something different from what the US said and do something different from what the US did. However, Imam acted in a way that US presidents admitted that Khomeini humiliated us. And that was the truth of the matter.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.